Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call, let's see what happens here. The computer is doing its own thing, as usual. Okay, to join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and click on the Dare to Win button. When you click on the Listen Live button, you will then be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the UNU community through the members-only portal. When you register for the UNU community, please use the same name you use to join UNU. Only 10 weeks until the 2024 UNU Annual Convention and Members Meeting, which will be held on Saturday, the 9th of March, and Sunday, the 10th of March, in Atlanta. It is our first face-to-face meeting in a number of years. Mark your calendar and make plans to attend. Remember, this meeting is for members only. Now is a good time to make sure your dues are current so you can take part in what is going to be an awesome event. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of UNU. This evening's topic is Kwanzaa is over. Is it really? Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you this evening?
Yes, good evening, Sister Q. I am doing fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you very well.
All right, thank you. I wasn't sure I had to change phones, but I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking, and I'm glad to be here to converse with the family.
We're glad to have you back again. You always have very good content. So, Brother Shabaka, you think the Kwanzaa is really not over?
Thank you for raising that question. It's very important. And yes, I do. I believe that it's still here, still with us. And I can go into that in a few minutes, but it's right around us.
Okay. So what is it? What should it look like now and the days ahead if Kwanzaa is not over? Because everybody thinks Kwanzaa was just 7 days and now it's done. So what should we be looking for now?
Well, Sister Q, as you know, this period of time between December 26th and January 1st of each year, particularly since 1966, has been to celebrate what Dr. Manalana Karinga put together, all right, to help us understand what we must try to accomplish, all right, in order to begin to think of ourselves as sovereign human beings. In other words, to elevate ourselves from slaves. Now, you say 1966. You know, that's some over a hundred years ago then, since we were gotten out of slavery. So why would he be talking about 1966, reminding us that we still had tasks and work to do in order to really free ourselves? All right, so I contend that in order to free ourselves, he was commemorating those things of our past. All right, trying to remember, for us to remember, that has been not allowed into society, whether we were in slavery that period of time, since the founding of the country until 1865, and up till the present time, with the belief, and that's all, it's a belief. I tell you the best example, and I'm going to stray a little bit, but I want to try to make this because of the significance of the movie. I think most of us have seen The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I believe at least some form of it. It was a number of versions of, and I believe that it was made by really a black woman. The significance of The Matrix is that it was fashioned in AI, and you know how AI is always in the news now. Well, this was a movie decades ago, which showed how AI, the machinery, all right, had enslaved humanity. And because of, I guess, a war that emerged, you really couldn't get the energy from the sun. In other words, as we now have tools that can capture the sun and then convert that capture, solar panels, convert that capture to electricity, which then can power our cities, power cars now with batteries, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but human mm-hmm. beings were enslaved, all right? We were enslaved, all right? Even though we had, and this is very important, even though we had the imagination that we were living freely. Now, look at the black man and woman today, and you get an idea of what the Matrix was portraying. All right, many of us really think with the PhDs that we have, the MDs, the people with learned education, those people among our community who are now have fascinating jobs, all right, that we've made it and that we're no longer encaptured and free, while at the same time the Matrix was trying to see the people that it had brainwashed absorb energies from human cells, all right, using them as batteries to power their machines because they could no longer get energy from the sun, so they use human beings as cells, as batteries, in order to get energy from them to power the machines. And at the same time, it would create an illusion that they were living in a very pleasant and free world. And so what they saw now is not the free world. Well, to the average black person, they would can probably say that this is the best country in the world. And at the same time, they're shooting us down, right, brothers and sisters, all right, to give the illusion of freedom. So I said that's the best example. Now, what I saw Dr. Coringa do was to provide us with some checks, in other words, to do some examination, all right, so that we could get out of the enslavement mentality and into a realistic mentality of where we are, real, all right, and that he set these criterias down. These criterias were the principles associated with Kwanzaa, unity. Well, this is what we needed, what we hadn't seen as a consequence of the overlay of slavery, a slave mentality on our society. All right, so we see that one of the first principles, the second principle, Hakuji Tagalia, all right, determination, self-determination, all right, then we see Ujima, all right, collective works, then we see Ujamaa, cooperative economics. We see near purpose. Now, I want you to put those in the context of things of building character, all right, all the way up to Imani, all right, which means we must have faith when, in fact, the Europeans will try to place doubts. All right, so we see these mm-hmm. things, and the value system that he brought up will do that. Now, let me just take one particular value, because I'll give an example of what that means. If we take, I usually like to look at the Ujamaa, all right, and Ujima, collective work and responsibility, all right, which means we work collectively together, and from we develop responsibility to make sure that we deliver by working together. In other words, we're working together. I have assignments, all right? I have tasks, and my objective, you know, because I'm part of the whole, is to try to complete those assignments and tasks. Because we work together, we divide up the work into various tasks that need to be done. And in doing so, in other words, my contribution to that is to ensure that I get back reward from that. Okay. Now, does that sound like he's talking about just doing that once a year? I mean,
obviously
no,
not.
All right, so,
I would
no, obviously not.
Not.
not once a year. So what it means is that the unity together we get from the first, all right, and we bring that, and we have to, implicit in all of those values is the need to plan. Because, see, I don't have a work assignment unless I'm planning to accomplish something collectively, cooperatively. Mm-hmm. All right. And then we get Ujamaa, which is basically using the unity and Ujima together, all right, to deal about economics, all right, cooperative economics, where we make sure that what we are trying to address is actually rewards for the collective, all right, because I know as part of the collective, by putting energies and working towards the benefit of the collective, I, as part of the collective, will benefit. And so what I'm saying is that Kwanzaa is not a one-week celebration. It is meant to be celebrated throughout the year, but as we come together each year to commemorate, really to assess. That's what I'm giving Shabaka's interpretation now. What we do, or what we should be doing, is coming together to assess, all right, the accomplishments that we have made during the year, all right, towards whatever goals or objectives we have set, all right. And so what do we need to do during the year, all right? I said or mentioned planning, right, sister? All right, well, let me jump on that a little bit, because it's the planning that becomes crucial. So let's say that one of my tasks, and I'm going to use the church example, okay? Many years ago, a brother, Noel Jones, I believe a couple decades ago, was a host on Tavis Smiley's show, or rather his program. You know, Tavis was bringing people together to talk about the state of Black America. All right. And one of them was trying to pass the covenant, which was the covenant for Black America. What this was designed to do, all right, was to outline what would be needed in order to take us from where we were to where we should be, according to promises that was made after the Civil War. Interestingly, Minister Farrakhan had attended those sessions, and he had indicated that a covenant that was needed was not a covenant for Black America that would be made to the Europeans. All right, it should be a covenant among ourselves. Now, what Minister Farrakhan was trying to say is that we needed to apply to ourselves. We need to apply to ourselves, really, the Nguza Saba. He didn't say that, but he was talking about what are the things that we need to do, all right, as we face each other. All right, if I'm facing the European, I'm not talking about us doing for self. If I'm facing the European, who has the most of the resources, if not all right? We're talking about begging and trying to convince him, all right, that we are human beings and that we deserve some of the things that we see that's been reserved for white people, all right? And he made that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tavis talked about that for a little bit, but then got off of it. But anyway, Bishop Jones made the statement that, and the reason I'm picking it up, because I see the statement is very important to what Ulu is doing, but I'll get into that a little bit later. He made the statement that, let's say half the population, or we could say we got roughly about 45 million people, let's say even a third of the population. All right, let's say a third of the population. So somewhere between 15 and 20 million each Sunday find our brothers and sisters find themselves in church. All right, and let's say now that's 15, 20 million, okay, on Sunday. okay, and let's say an average donation to the church, let me make it $4. That's, I'm talking about average. Some people give, some people don't give. Some people give more than $4. Some people give less than $4. Mm-hmm. Some might not give any. But you know that the people go to church to be inspired, and then the collection plate is passed around, all right, because people got something out of the sermon from the pastor or a member of the clergy, all right, of the particular denomination that they were, you know, honoring. And so they were inspired to donate. Okay, and let's say on average they got four. So we're talking about $4, that's $80 million, roughly, close to $80 million. That would be collected that one Sunday. Okay, and then we know that the churches take that $80 million that collected one Sunday. Okay. I'm paraphrasing what he said to describe what I'm being, and I'm updating it. All right. So $80 million is going into the banks. More than likely, the $80 million is going into white banks. You know, maybe a few million might be going to black banks, but most of it is $80 million is going to white banks. Now, if we take that $80 million that's going to white banks as each Monday, okay, all right, so there's 52 weeks, all right, 52 weeks in a year. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. So we got roughly 400, when we say over the 52-week period, more than $400 million, or billion dollars, I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. All right. Would be given to the banks that would refuse you and I, just because we have African descent, all right, a loan, all right, to purchase property or something that would provide, excuse me, wealth, all right? And so over this period of time, we have amassed. Now, we know that the spending of all of us collectively together, all right, is spending more than $4 a plate load, okay, to the tune of $1.3 or $4 trillion, but I was just looking at the church because we donate a lot of money to the church who invest that money in the financial institution and barely get any of it back. Okay, now that's the church. What must we do? This is one thing that we can think of doing. All right, now to start. Now we know we got many denominations. All right, are you with me a little bit? Can you agree with that?
Yes.
We have many denominations. Okay.
I can,
we have many
denominations.
We have many denominations, okay, which makes it difficult for us to work collectively together. All right. But now let me just go inside of one denomination. Let's say the Baptist, because I think majority of our people are in the Baptist churches. All right. A kind of discussion that can take place is talking to the ministers at the at any of the conventions that they have, just the Baptist now. All right. And we talk about unity. Well, why don't we talk about a unity of placing our money in a black bank or black banks? See, now, so you're saying now, what can I do by using the Nguza Saba? Well, if the black churches, and particularly the black church that I'm associated with, is not putting money into black banks, all right, because we can't get any resolve from white banks, then maybe that during the course of the year, we can talk about taking the money, all right, that our churches is collecting and put those in our black bank that may be nearby. Okay, and usually we can find a black bank at least in some community. All right, now that's dealing with the idea of unity when we are asking to come together and express some form of unity of taking our money and working together and putting it into black banks. And then the unity comes in when we begin to have those ecumenical councils, which is made up of different denominations of the Christian religion, all right, to work together mm-hmm. and begin to get them to see the need and importance of taking the money that they collect on Sunday and putting it in a black mm-hmm. bank on Monday. All right. So you're saying right. during the year, mm-hmm. I have identified a principle or several principles of Kwanzaa that I can use just in association with the church. Am I making sense?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, all right. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, sister. Yeah, so.
No, I was saying. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't sound like you were getting ready to say something.
No, I was just going to say that has been a question in my mind for many years. Why have not we done that? It seems like such a simple solution to many of our problems, because then we wouldn't have to. We would have more control over our financial situation.
You are correct, because then once I begin to put a large sum or large sums of money into the black banks, we have some leverage, because we know how the black banks are mm-hmm. scared to do anything, and sometimes the rules and policies that they have are rather strenuous, and that's why we say, well, look, I ain't got no time to be worrying with these Negro banks, and we go to the white banks. But see, the thing is that if we're working cooperatively together and unified, in other words, we're bringing the different denominations together, all right, and making decisions mm-hmm. about using the money that we invest in white banks and getting none of the service, we can dictate. You mm-hmm. say, well, you tell them, say, look, I'm putting $500,000. I like these kind of service for the, you know, even
exactly.
create a credit mm-hmm. union. But you say you can make demands, which is within the charter that they're able to make, you know, some of the mm-hmm. demands on what you would like to get as a consequence of investing in this black bank. You know, you tell the bank, I'm investing. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done two things.
Mm-hmm.
You work in a unified fashion collectively together. All right. You begin to integrate the cultural expressions usually associated with Kwanzaa and the principles. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But these principles now have a possibility of an economic component. All right. And we're just doing that one thing. You know, that's one thing, all right? Cooperative economics, when we have cooperative working together to get that done from our black banks, all right? And we're taking on the responsibilities of convincing inside of our church and among churches ecumenically to work together, cooperatively together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing, one of the things that popped in my mind that we could do during the year, and then when Kwanzaa comes for celebration between December 26th and January 1st, we begin to express our use of these values, we can report on our success that what we attempted to do the year earlier.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we don't just say, well,
right.
yeah, Ujima, Kuwumba, you know, Imani, and all that. Yeah, well, I use
mm-hmm.
this,
mm-hmm.
and this is what I use in my church. And this was what we were successful
right.
in doing. And then you
mm-hmm.
report on that, you know, in the community, the success of doing that. And so
mm-hmm.
it makes meaningful the things associated with our participation when we exercise a commemoration of Kwanzaa yearly, because we're attempting to see what benefits and achievements we have done during the years in trying to practice, you know, the Nguza Saba as best we can. Well, let me just stop here a moment,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you might want to follow up with a question. But that's one thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, As you were saying that, Brother Shabaka, it occurred to me that the church as a group, you know, as an organization, can take its money to a black bank, but then it can also say our members individually and as family groups will also put their money in the black bank. So that gives even more leverage to the individual members of the church to have like a backing so that they can make, as you say, demands on the bank, because if the church member goes to the bank and is not satisfied, then they can take it up with the church, and the church will take it up with the bank. So I think that's another point that we have not looked at and even considered.
That's a very good point that you raise, Sister Q. And that shows you we can find and identify ways, all right, to extend Kwanzaa, all right, throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we can always report, you know, at these gatherings that we have community-wide in whatever city or locale we happen to be at, and it's a little global now, all right, our success and what we were able to do. So you can report, all right, and then you can begin to add from that celebration, well, working with others, what are we going to do? I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, even Dr. Karinga, you know, he usually has a message each time. I'm going to just quote just part of a message that he said, all right, which laid, I guess, the foundation of that. He quotes, he says, Kwanzaa thus comes into being, grounded itself, and grew as an act of freedom, an instrument of freedom, and a celebration of freedom, and a practice of freedom. Okay, so he's talking philosophically. What he's saying is that we're trying to get free. I mean, you know, so that means that there's something that is currently being exhibited in this environment which inhibits our ability to get free, all right? And so he says Kwanzaa lays the foundation for that. He goes on to say, it was an act of self-determination, he's talking about Kwanzaa, and self-authorization, a means of cultivating and expanding consciousness and commitment, a righteous revealing in our recaptured sense of the sacredness, he's talking about the culture now, all right, soulfulness and the beauty of our black self, and the practice of principles that engenders, and sustains liberated and liberating ways to understand and assert ourselves in the world. All right, so he's basically saying lays down ourselves to accomplish those things because they have not been articulated to us in the past. And so the example that we just talked about is one of the ways or several ways in which you can articulate what's going on towards your liberation towards freedom, which you can report on and success. Now, I like to look at it. I like to continue when we look at it, and I'm going to just say what the principles are. All right, you know, emoji is the first day, kuji, chagulia is the second day. That's unity, and then, of course, self-determination. All right, to determine for ourselves. We have unity. We come together. Then we determine for ourselves what benefits us, and then we show how it benefits us. We have ejima, which is collective works and responsibilities, so this is part of that, to set up an economy, ujima, cooperatively, all right, and then with the purpose, in other words, the purpose of mia is for us to be able to free ourselves, but notice where that value is placed. It's placed as the fifth day, all right, and then the creativity that is needed, kuumba, all right, and then lastly, imani, have the faith that essentially that you can do it. And so when we look at these, when we look at these, it attempts, I think, to characterize the value system, looking at concrete worries that they can be used. All right, we listen to them. We need to cooperatively, we need to collectively define their purpose and how they are to be used, because it's not necessarily individual, because you're going to be working with individuals. Kwanzaa is not just for the individuals. It's individuals working with other individuals, all right, to accomplish tasks and objectives that lead us to freedom, liberation, self-determination. Okay. All right. So you cooperatively working with people to do that. Now, one of the things that I've been involved in the past couple of years was working with a group of people we call our panelists that put together a long-term strategic plan for Black America. The purpose of the plan, it was a group of us, a couple people in, a couple people in Ulu, as a matter of fact, and it was a brother out of Georgia, all right, that called us together. All right, and the framework was just to give us general guidance on producing independence, self-reliance, self-determination, and liberty. In other words, it was a plan to do those things to give us some of the same kind of stuff that we had talked about during Kwanzaa. Okay. In fact,
right.
The
okay.
plan was to use the Nguza Saba, all right, as a, I guess, a cultural guiding tool, all right, as we develop, all right, and move ourselves towards self-determination. All right. So the plan this is going to be a little technical. I don't want to make it that, but you can get a structure. All right, you noticed that I had mentioned earlier about the church. All right, the plan adopted what is called internationally a classification of functions of government. In other words, listen, the classification of the functions of government. You got a government. All right, this is what generally the government do. This was adapted by the UN years ago, all right, and it was for the whole world, okay? You say for the whole world. You say it was adapted a year ago by you, but we know that the Europeans control the UN. Well, the Europeans who control the UN colonized the world. Okay, you follow me? So
right.
they use a structure that was comfortable for them, all right, to see how to manage, all right? And, of course, you know, the government look at resources, how it transfers resources. It uses taxes, a means of taxes, and, of course, it has to provide services, all right? Then how it provides services, in other words, it look at how people are operating, all right, both politically, economically, culturally, all right? And then it looks at how the funds are being translated. So when we put together the plan, all right, we say, well, we got to do something similar, all right, because this is where we are at this particular time. All right, we may change the scenery or the environment later, but right now, where we are right now is to see where funds are going. Let me give you a point, another case in point, just to represent what I'm saying. When we had the segregated school system, all right, the school system was this. All right, that was one of the functions of government, to have education institutions, one of the reasons for having education institutions, so it could train young people to come and manage the government as well as the economic sectors, all right, of the economy. I mean, the economic sector, all right, of the society. All right, so it provided a foundation by school. Now, we know in the South, resources that was handed out. So this is the state handed out resources to the educational institution, to white schools when we had to segregate it, and had little resources for Black schools. Okay. All right, well, when you think of it, in a sense, that meant that since we were not getting equal distribution of resources, they were mostly given to white schools, that we were sort of black schools, were basically subsidizing white schools. In other words, we was giving them mm-hmm. through the power of the state, took the resources that were supposed to come to us, and it was given to white schools. All right? All right, you understand mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think you got it. Yeah.
Right,
all right, so.
Sure. I got it.
Okay. So we were subsidizing that. All right, well, in the structure of governance, the school system, all right, was part, or education was part of the sector that was the responsibility of the government to make sure funds were acquired or distributed. In other words, they collected taxes. Where do I distribute the funds? Okay. And that's how it's mm-hmm. supposed mm-hmm. to happen in the United States, France, Nigeria, whatever, because like I said, the so-called developing countries were all colonized by those countries who are using this. All right. Now, by way of, and we call this a classification of the functions of government. In addition to that classification, we also found in the UN what we call a process for analyzing the effectiveness of the distribution of funds, all right, and we call it what they call a common country analysis. Well, that common country analysis was to look at how, once the distribution of funds were there, the common country analysis would then determine, all right, to analyze problems and then how to resolve the problems that were found that impeded the ability of that of the particular sector, all right, from being sustained. All right, so we examine that,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
just to give you an idea of the sectors, the sectors very, very similar to what Elder Neely Fuller put together in his book dealing with racism. When he looked at nine, mm-hmm. we looked at nine. The UN looked at 10. We combined. We combined those 10. We combined one into another and looked at nine instead mm-hmm. of 10. But I just wanted to give you an idea of just to tell you what these sectors are, and then I'm going to highlight that with what it was that we were talking about earlier with the practice of the Nguza Saba, because now we begin to mm-hmm. see concretely how funds are moved. So that's the economics, how funds are moving to sustain various sectors that the government has identified that they will be responsible for in order to maintain civil order in the society that they were governing. So think of that mm-hmm. word governance, mm-hmm. all right? All right.
Mm-hmm.
But just like the Nguza Saba with its seven principles, the sectors that we identify, one, which is general public service, all right, that was one sector, all right, and that goes into the public sectors. They look, in other words, people interacting with people, because all of these are based on how people interact with each other, and then how right. that is sustained to benefit most of the people in the society. All right, so a second one might be defense, public order, and safety. Defense was separate. We put defense, we meshed that with public order and safety, all right, which you can, you know, mm-hmm. it's almost self-explanatory when you hear it. Defense, public order, and then of safety,
mm-hmm.
okay? So we're saying that resources right. are going in us to sustain. We can understand that a sovereign country must have defense to protect its sovereignty from those outside, all right, and must have public
mm-hmm.
order, all right, in order to organize when it needs to defend itself from against any threat from outside. So we have economic affairs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's self-explanatory. Environmental protection. The reason environmental protection is important, not so much because people are talking about climate change, and that's a misnomer in my opinion. It shouldn't be climate
mm-hmm.
change, because climate change is looking at data that you're collecting over many years, mm-hmm. more than decades, centuries. In other words, you have the method and means to begin to measure climate effects over centuries, at least decades. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I think what people are talking about is the warming that we have seen, and relatively recently we have seen a lot of coolness as opposed to warming. So we're not really talking
right.
about the climate change as much as we're talking about weather warming and all that other kind of stuff. All right. We also are not included in that weather manipulation, because there's enough electronics and energy creation, you know, with the waves that is created by electromagnetic radiation that is pumped through the through the atmospheres and what have you. Okay, they in turn causes a reaction in the ionosphere and the atmospheres and what have you that creates problems. You see some of these chemtrails. You know, nobody knows what's in there except, you know, theories, and some people have attempted to try to measure these trails that seem to be leaving a plane. All right, but they're being all over the place. I mean, I started recognizing these a few years ago. I couldn't quite understand why then a man said they were based on him using a plane to follow and collect some information. But again, that's not verified, but it's noticeable. Mm-hmm. So environment protection, housing,
sure.
and community amenities, health and wellness, we know that. That's a sector that is need, like you got in the United States, health care and all that other kind of stuff. Recreation, religion, well, we talked about religion and culture. They seem to be closely aligned. Education and social protection. That was the nine sectors. All right. Now let's apply these things. All right, I used the example of religion before. Okay, I'm going to use the example of the Nguza Cyber in this application of another sector. All right, and let's call that economic affairs. Okay, now when I in talking about economic affairs, I'm saying now how do we in economic affairs. All right, work as a unit, in other words, together, we're unified, we work cooperatively, and we're able to measure the effects of our cooperative activities, okay, and then cooperatively make changes if necessary, all right, or to enhance more if we find a need and reason to do so, okay. So take a look. I want you to take a look, Sister Q, at and I assume now no hands are up, right?
No hands are up.
All right, let's take a look at the present, the creation of the UBCs, Ulu-based communities. All right. Now, for some of you that might not be familiar with that who are listeners, the Ulu-based communities are small groupings of people in a community. All right. In other words, we have individuals and families come together, Ulu members come together, all right, as sort of a, call it a chapter or a cell of Ulu. Then we have the nonprofit organization, similar to when you get a nonprofit organization, you move people through that nonprofit organization, and you know, and then from the nonprofit organization and moving members through it, you can create a credit union. Well, Ulu is not a credit union, but that's just to give an example of moving folks through a nonprofit, all right, to a credit union. But what we do is move people through the nonprofit and divide them up into the creation of cells or chapters, all right, which we call Ulu-based communities. Now, remember now, we're talking about economic affairs, all right? And so with these chapters and communities, all right, an outgrowth of an investment club is created. In other words, you got a chapter or a cell of Ulu, all right? And members of that cell of Ulu in some area All right, create an investment club. All right, so the chapters provide, in other words, because you got groups of people together, you got families from the community coming together, you know, a little more than about maybe 20 people, all right, because you could have different chapters throughout a community, all right, come together, all right, and begin. Now, listen to this. They can begin to articulate the practice, all right, of the Nguza Saba towards a particular outcome that would be beneficial for the community of which they are a part. Now, since they are an investment club, all right, in other words, decisions can be made to invest in things that they see as beneficial for the community, and they might have various tools to be able to provide, get surveys on what the community feels that it needs, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But you have the Nguza Saba. You got those eight principles, all right? Number one, to build unity among itself. In addition to building unity among itself, it also has the opportunity to go outside of itself. In other words, the chapter, all right, goes outside of itself and begin to interact for, let's say, for instance, churches within that environment. All right, to begin to get churches to start looking at putting your money in black banks. Okay, this is Ulu structure. All right, to encourage that if other structures may not be encouraging that. All right, and so you talk about that. So getting the banks, get other institutions within the community to do similar kinds of things, because we're not only in the church, we're all over. All right, to do similar situation and begin to spread. Now, what are you going to use in order to do that? You're going to use unity, umoja, you're going to use kujichagulia, all right, excuse me, you're going to use ujima, you're going to use ujamaa, because it's economics, all right, cooperatively economics, all right, you're going to use nia, the purpose, which is the reason for bringing that all together, all right, the creativity necessary to see how to do that in your community, regardless of what it is, and, of course, the faith and confidence that you can do it, all right? That's what we're talking about, all right? And so those nine sectors, I just looked at education and economic development because, see, the state already has it mapped out. It has how much resources are going there, and in racist America, not only have how resources, they have where the resources going to go, how they're going to gerrymander, you know, the political districts and make sure funds are there. That's what it can do. We can rebuke that by our own economic participation just in the development of the chapters that I just outlined. So let me stop there, sister, just in case you have a question you might want to ask, or there's some people that are eager to jump into the conversation.
No, there are no hands raised at this time. But I want to say I appreciate you. Oh, wait, we got a hand up. Let me go here.
All right, thank you.
Okay, calling with the last four digits, 05-80, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yep.
Are you there?
I didn't realize that worked. calling from Philly.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Good old Philly.
Yeah.
My old stomping ground when I was up the coast. I'm down in Florida now. Yes, sir. What are you thinking about, brother?
Okay.
Got a few things on my mind, but I'll start with the beginning of possibly a separate economy and currency, the idea came to me when I was talking to a friend of mine, a coworker of mine, and because they are trying to phase out the SEPTA tokens. And I was thinking, well, if I knew a black genius or somebody, I could just tell them, hey, why don't you go collect the tokens and we could use that as a starter pack for starting a totally different economy, which is what they probably tried to do with all the Bitcoins and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's a little too otherworldly. And by otherworldly, I mean it blurs the line between reality and people have had enough of that. They don't need more of that. So, and doing it in a way that, you know, 86 is any kind of need for insurance, because that's, you know, a whole racket that they got going on. Insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the insurance company is part of the current landscape, and we don't control that. And they have us believing of the necessity for that, because they're saying that you can, they get you to invest in the pool, and then supposedly because of the investment in a pool, and we see the need to invest in a pool too, I'll explain why in a minute. But they see the investment of a pool, all right, such that if a person for whatever reason needs the resources of the insurance company, a person that's part of the pool, they can address it. Now, they can also tell you in addressing whatever help you need that you may have to do co-payments and all that other kind of stuff. In other words, you have to still take out money. You're paying monthly your insurance policy, which is high in a lot of cases, but you still got to take money out of your pocket to get service for what the insurance company is there to resolve. We say that you don't have no say with the insurance company, and they are private and profiteering, which means then it benefits the person who controls the insurance company. But then again, what Ulu says, suppose you control the insurance company as a collective, like the people who go through a nonprofit and form a credit union. They control that. They have meetings. The membership can dictate what the board does and what have you. The same way that at Cobra meetings, the membership dictates what we want. Now, our small groupings are going to be groupings of investment clubs. All right, the investment clubs means that we do not have to worry about the securities and securities policies that governs investments. And usually the insurance company, the Securities and Exchange Commission, what they look at is when you invest, do you have some say-so in the investment? If you have some say-so in the investment, then you're not subject to a security regulation, as others are. In other words, if I put my money in the stock, all right, I have no say in how that money is used, other than I put it in the stock. They can do whatever they want. They can manipulate the company, whatever they want, and I have no say in it. I usually just get pleased. But anyway, I'm saying all that to say that what we at Ulu is doing is understanding that when we work cooperatively together and pool our resources, and then the people dictates how those resources are to be used, they dictate how those resources be used, we begin to lay the foundation of a separate economy, because it's our money being used for ourselves. It's not the government taking our money or a private corporation's taking our money to use for what it wants to do. And when we talk about the government functions, the sectors in the functions of these sectors that the government has organized, well, we have the capabilities of taking these businesses, these investment clubs, all right, establishing the economy or the businesses that we want for the benefit of the people in the community, and we can use various tools to get information on how people see what business they feel are the most important, and then encourage them to control that. But I don't know if I addressed what you were saying, but I wanted to address what I understood you to be saying. So continue. You might want to follow up.
Yeah, that did address it. And I would like to ask about that. Would their execution of that primarily be a sort of operating in the blind spots of their policies? Is that what I heard in there?
Well,
like in order to negate those policies that try to pigeonhole those groups, you know, into like whether or not they can use securities and things like that.
Well, the way we are doing it is to circumvent, if I got your question correct, to circumvent the Security and Exchange Regulation that affects investing. All right. And
yeah.
So all that does is
they don't have any
right
say.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. And that's what we're on the thing about. And the next important thing is that because of the nature of how the clubs are set up, and because of the application of the Nguza Saba, it dictates, you know, that people come together, they discuss, and they determine how the funds are going to be used, all right, and what they see as the most appropriate investment vehicle and for what industries they feel are necessary that will revitalize their community where the government has not. But anyway, maybe Sister Q can give you where you can check us out at if you are not already a member of ULU, and look like we're running out of time. My purpose was to try to talk about how Kwanzaa could be used during the year for things that we are normally doing, but we just don't normally think of really using that tool. The Nguza Saba, unity.
I do have a question about that, because mm-hmm. I was thinking about how, like for example, the Juneteenth, and mm-hmm. I don't know if the, like here in Philly, there's the Adunde Festival. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have that in other states, but I was thinking like, yeah, something like that. We need more of that in all the states for us, because there needs to be a draw, like something to draw us together and to get that mm-hmm. collective energy brewing so that people can have it sort of in their psychology to be thinking in that collective manner and getting that brotherhood and sisterhood back. Because and like for example, the Juneteenth, everybody, you know, the Juneteenth is, you know, set where it's set, but when mm-hmm. when the Juneteenth first was being established and it first came out and, you know, everybody started, you know, knowing about it and they put it on a calendar, you know, I looked into it myself because of some things people were saying on Facebook. And when I looked into it, I found out, oh, the Juneteenth was only the first step of that process, of that emancipation process. And every month they actually, different states had let out some, you know, some slaves or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
and the process didn't actually stop until December 19th. So that mm-hmm. means Juneteenth was only the start of it and December 19th was the end of it. So that means really we should be doing something every month that's basically the same as the Juneteenth until December 19th from June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could operate it that way. In fact, it's important that we just don't do it one time. You know, it must be continuous. As you said, with groups and collectives coming together and really setting the meaning.
Thank you for
all right, brother.
Your comment. Yeah.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to let him know he can go to the website, usliftingus.com. And study the information that you find there. And if you think you would like to be a member, you can apply for membership, and you will be vetted. So don't think that just because you applied, you're automatically a member. Someone will get back to you and make sure that you're UU material. That's the best way I could say it without sounding bad. So thank you for your comments and questions.
Yeah, thank you, brother. And we do have a member up there in a couple members up there in the Philly area. But anyway, we'll wait to hear from you. So please check us out and appreciate the questions that, and conversation that you've had with me and Sister Q. All right, Sister Q,
okay,
it's up to you.
Okay, so we can just, I'll just thank you, Brother Shabaka, for the information that you provided tonight. As always, you had very good information to share. We want to thank everyone who joined us this evening, and we invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace,
sister.
We have been beholden to a venomous fabrication of our embellished lives that has started with those little unscrupulous lies that drip dry droppings of seeded untruth, while planting those in-between lies, lined and covered with a stale stench of muck and manure, leaving open the cracks and crevices for those oppressive lies that we keep slipping and sliding in, while continuing to fertilize all other lies that create the great white lies. That strong ascending lie that consciously rises itself above the lowly fields from which it sprang, leaping high into the mouths of fevered mountains, bursting its malevolent manifestation into an explosion of bubbling hot lava on a meanderous path, saturating its infernal roots by slowly and skillfully penetrating and piercing, burning and blistering the souls of black folks, killing our kindred spirits as we lay buried beneath its blanket of oil and devastation amidst the hidden identity of its bottomless base. That already powerful lie that has muscled its way into the center core of our condensed celestial region, causing clouds shaped like mushrooms to materialize into a deformed, seething steam of angry vapors, spawning hot acidic rains, descending pure hellish pain, while scalding and searing, singeing and scorching the souls of black folks, eliminating the true essence of our existence as we continuously disappear into its whirlpool and are immersed in the turbulent clutches of its eternal deception. And as it beckons to you to lay your mind gently upon its floor, remember its only purpose is to perpetrate the growth of itself while stripping you of your solidity, bleaching the bareness of your being and dissolving you into its damnation. For it truly fears that those among us who have escaped its wrath and are free from its falseness will one day filter the fertility of veracity, unleashing unspoken tremors of truth, subtly